let's start the show.
It's January 17th, 2013. Welcome to This Is Only a Test, the official podcast of Tested.com. I'm Will Smith. Joining me today, back from CES, Norman Chan. How you doing, sir?
I'm doing okay. I actually missed that intro. I at some point over this past weekend, I thought to myself, boy, I really wish we had the podcast intro for the CES shows. And then I realized I did not remember what that intro sounded like.
I could have sent it to you. We have the technology to get that file.
We did not have the technology to really play it back.
Oh, that's true. Wirecast, right? Oof. Mistakes were made. We learned a lot of lessons at CES.
I'm glad we didn't have to lug, you know, expensive equipment.
No, not hauling the TriCaster to CES is the right decision. But joining us on the table today, Wesley Fenlon. How are you doing, sir?
Hello.
I'm far side of the table.
Remarkably not sick after CES.
I don't think anyone was
good sick. On you.
None of us were sick.
Yeah, none of tested crew was sick anyway.
It felt great.
We washed your hands constantly.
Heard the sniffles, saw the Purell, used it, and we're all sick, despite being in the cold in the winter in the desert.
Did it snow? Was there CES snow?
It snowed in my heart.
Oh, it snowed.
I went ice skating.
We had frost this morning in Pacifica. We don't have frost very often. I had to scrape the windshield. It's the one time a year. Wesley Fenlon, I heard a horrible rumor about you and CES, and I want to get to the bottom of this right now.
Uh-oh.
It is my understanding that you carry a backpack when you're walking around CES.
This year, I did take my backpack.
And it was a conscious decision the morning of leaving for CES.
Yeah, I actually had my shoulder bag packed the night before.
Like a messenger bag, like grown-ups carry.
Yeah, that I brought today.
Okay.
And it was what I had last year. And last year, the combination of that messenger bag and the 5D Mark II around my neck every day really was not comfortable at all.
Do you have a 5D Mark II around your neck?
The whiskey one?
Well, that was a 40D.
30D. Sorry.
30D.
Yeah.
It was still heavy.
I was like, what?
And the messenger bag, I didn't have a lot of stuff with me, but between MacBook Air and like notebook and like a water bottle and stuff, like it added up. And short of getting some kind of, I don't know, like fuzzy padded strap for the shoulder harness, like.
I don't think the padded strap makes a whole lot of difference.
It does not.
It probably wouldn't have.
Much like the professional arm wrestler has one giant forearm on one side.
Yeah.
The professional conference goer who wears a shoulder bag has one bulging shoulder.
Hold on. Do you not switch?
No, you don't switch.
Oh, I switch.
I switch.
Yeah, you rotate. You go from side to side.
No. I also, in my final years of high school, one of my prized possessions was a hybrid shoulder bag backpack made by Oakley.
Wow. That's pretty extreme.
It was not a shoulder bag.
They have the really thick kind of padded backpack-like strap, right?
But it was one shoulder only, but the backpack still went on your back and not on your waist.
Well, but the thing about a backpack,
what a bad bag that was.
Well, how many books were you carrying around in your final year of high school?
High school was a lot of books.
Yeah. There's two possible tangents off of this conversation. Because now, I learned the other day that kids carry like rolling suitcases to haul their books around. Tangent
in high school?
Tangent the first.
Wait. Okay.
This is choose your own podcast adventure. Tangent the second is that backpacks, like the straps, distributing the weight on your shoulders is not the goal of a backpack. You're supposed to put the waistband on, which lets you carry it on your hips, where you can carry much more weight for a longer period of time.
Tangent. I'm going to put my finger in the second tangent to hold it, that spot.
Okay.
I believe on page 75, but I'm going to flip to page 36 and go for the rolling backpack because I feel like that's going to lead us somewhere.
This is for elementary school kids mostly, but I saw I was driving to work the other day.
Because this is not what I saw in 21 Jump Street. Now, if they had this in 21 Jump Street, that is the definition of zero strapping.
It's a major cultural shift.
When Channing Tatum says he wish he could zero strap it, he one straps it. If he could, he could zero strap it.
Yeah.
I think what he meant to say was he wished he had a rolling backpack.
He wished he had a rolling bag. So rolling into elementary school, and as kids were coming back to school the other day, they were literally all rolling like little rolly suitcase bags.
Wow, is it like carry on?
Were you in an elementary school?
No, I drive by one on the way to work.
That beard is not allowed to go to elementary school.
No, okay.
I just wanted to clarify.
I just drove up with my van. I was like, "Hey, kids, anybody want some ice cream?" Tangent the third.
Rolly backpacks. I want to know if anyone out there who's not in elementary school, whether it be high school or college, actually uses a rolly backpack.
So I asked about the rolly backpacks with friends who have elementary school age kids.
And
I've done some research.
What's
on
the consensus?
This. Apparently, there's some research that showed that kids carrying more than like 20 or 25 pounds worth of books in their bags, which happens at like third grade now,
or compressing their spines.
They're fucking up their backs for life. Basically.
So you can either fuck up your back for life,
yeah,
or your social standing.
Yeah. Well, I think the
choose
idea
your
is
own adventure, kids.
They all gave their kids rolly bags for Christmas so that they wouldn't fuck up their backs long term.
So there's got to be social order, a ladder for the rolly bags.
Oh, I'm sure that like the kid who has like the Samsonite is the bottom of the pecking order. Or maybe way on the top.
No. Excuse me. The Samsonite one's a nice one. What you don't want is a Ninja Turtles one.
No, Ninja Turtle rolly bag.
In elementary school, come on.
Depends on what grade.
I mean, maybe the turtles aren't in right now,
but
thematically appropriate.
It depends on whether you're in third grade or sixth grade.
Are these the same luggage bags they sell for travel the kids have? Because kids in airports
have
the rolly bags for travel. Or are they made for school specifically? Like, is there a pouch that's for lunch?
I think this is a market op. We should Kickstarter this.
I don't think they go that far in thinking about what goes in what pouch.
Are there replacement wheels?
Step one, let's license my
little
pony.
They cost like $20. They're not going to. They just want you to buy a new one when your kid breaks it.
The important part of a rolly bag is how strong the bar is when it pulls out, the hinge. Because when you pull it out, it can easily snap if you have a plastic bar.
The important part of the rolly bag is that all four wheels are spinny. You don't only
four
drag.
Wheels?
Yeah. I have four wheels on my rolly bags. This is the best because you can hold it beside you.
You can turn.
You can turn it. It's like a little ballet of the carry-on
bag. It's a ballerina
bag.
Carry-on bag.
Yeah, it's the bomb.
It's very frou-frou.
I would not want a bag with wheels at CES because there are too many people. But
I think they disallow that, actually.
But I would say in elementary school – or not elementary school, but like in high school when you have a lot of books to carry, as lame as that is, it would have been –
and you know
nice
what?
To not
it turns
to
into a
weight.
Seat. It turns into a
yeah,
chair.
That's a good point.
Yeah. There's many, many, many useful purposes for the rolly bag.
All right. So now going back to page 75, because this obviously went to a dead end.
Okay.
Page 36.
Dusting off that old classic.
If I remember, the other tangent was that you're supposed to use your hip straps. Now, this is something I think any Boy Scout knows. When you have
absolutely
a backpack,
yeah,
you're supposed to put the weight on your hips and not on your shoulders. I do not know that, oh my God, Joey's doing push-ups. I do not know of any modern backpack that has waist straps.
Mine actually does have them, but I don't use them.
They're usually tucked in. Like they, by default, they come tucked in. So they're into like a little pouch so they don't flap around and get caught and stuff. Because I'm sure that somewhere, a kid has gotten his backpack strap stuck in a subway door.
I'm going to go thumbs down on the waist strap for school.
Oh, absolutely.
And books, but I will go thumbs up for tightening the straps and not sagging the backpack.
Which is what everyone did.
Oh, I like
which
a low
is
ride.
What everyone
yeah.
did.
Yeah.
But no, you got tight backpacks are the way to go. Tight straps on both straps.
I think it's totally dependent on how much weight you're carrying.
Because you don't want to be that kid who has like a loose backpack but it's really heavy with five books. And as you're running down the hall, it bounces because your shoulder straps are so loose. And you got to hold on to them. You're kind of like a velociraptor, kind of like huffing down the hallway.
Flop, 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 flop. At CES, did you use your waist strap, Wes?
I didn't, but I was only carrying probably, I don't know, 6 pounds of stuff.
Ooh. All you carry, it's you take.
I had my MacBook Air.
Yeah.
I had my MacBook Air charger.
So that's 3.5 pounds.
Had like a couple like energy bars.
Okay.
A bottle of water.
It's fascinating so far.
You know, like some headphones, pens.
Spare pair of socks.
The heaviest your bag is going to be at CES when you take it to the airport and to the hotel, and when you leave the hotel and go back to the airport, because that's when you have
everything.
Multiple laptops, tablets, all your chargers, batteries, everything. But all that stuff stays in the hotel.
Yeah. That's the smart place to leave that. Leave that at the hotel so that the maids can enrich themselves with their ill-gotten booty.
Yeah, so my backpack was pretty light and – I would say that even after spending hours on the floor wearing it, never really had sore shoulders.
So did you see anyone else toting a backpack on the floor of CES that wasn't like a camera dude or something? Because, I mean, Joey carries a backpack, but it is a big-ass, like, professional-ass camera backpack.
I would say that I'm sure I did, but I honestly do not pay attention to other people long enough to remember whether they have shoulder bags or backpacks or whatever.
Okay.
Plenty of people with swag bags.
Yeah, that's a mistake.
A lot of the people you see at CES aren't really carrying stuff with them. They're just browsing.
Yeah, walking with a notepad and a pen, maybe,
right,
some cards.
So I don't remember.
There you go.
But there were 150,000 people there. There was probably at least one other guy with a backpack.
I don't know about that. Norm, did you see any backpackers?
I did not see any backpackers.
Interesting. Okay. Do you want to talk about CES stuff, or do we want to jump straight into the news and then do CES? Let's save CES for later. Facebook this morning has...
No, that's when we say this morning.
Well, we're recording a little early due to the impending birth of my child. Facebook has a press conference on Tuesday morning where they announced social graph search.
Graph search.
Yeah, which is...
I don't think most people know what's... If you said to the layperson social graph, they would be very confused.
So isn't that like your calendar and like what you're doing and things like... social graph is... The idea of the social graph is it's all the connections that you have with other people and places and things that are contextual only to you or to people who know you, right? I mean, do you think that's a fair... So whereas Google knows that Yosemite National Park is the first national park, was founded by Roosevelt in the early 20th century. Yeah, it'd be awesome.
Yellowstone National Park.
Was he friends with Smokey?
No, but Grubby hung out at the park. And anyway... Google knows that stuff. Google knows facts about the place. But Google doesn't know that you went to Yosemite in 2005 and that you took a bunch of pictures there with your parents and, you know, all these different
cross-reference of data
things
that you provide.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, all the data they've been collecting since 2006 is now being used and fed into this search engine. So you could ask things like, hey, I want to see all the pictures that my friends took at Yosemite, right? And then it'll show all the pictures that your friends took at Yosemite and who was in them and all that kind of stuff. So previously to get that information, you'd have to go to everybody's profile pages. If you have 200 or 300 friends, that can take a long time. The other interesting thing is it's going to let you sort your friends by both location and like the things that they like. So you can say, oh, okay, I really like girls, and I want to have a HBO Girls viewing party.
I'm glad you clarified that it was the TV show Girls.
Right. I felt that was important.
Yep. Season premiere this week.
Yeah, it was very good.
Not very good.
You didn't like it?
No.
Oh, they leaned into the things that made it good last season.
No.
Anyway.
Okay.
Anyway, if you wanted to find out which of your friends in San Francisco like girls, you could invite them over for a girls viewing party.
It's capital G.
Capital G. This is out of context. This sounds real creepy.
Yep. You need to get off this quick.
If you want to watch Boardwalk Empire with a bunch of friends who like Boardwalk Empire, then you can go and search for friends in San Francisco who like Boardwalk Empire, and Facebook will then tell you that. And they can tell you that based on the things that you've liked in the past, things you've talked about, I assume, in your wall and in feed posts and all that kind of stuff.
When would you ever use this?
If I wanted to have a board game group. If I wanted to get people over to play board games, I bet that there are people that we don't know that play board games that like playing board games. We don't have that kind of information. I don't think this is a useful thing. I think it's neat. I think it will become invisibly useful.
Them using their data.
Yeah.
All the data they have.
Our data.
Our data that we've given them.
Yeah. I can't imagine. Like one of the other things they showed was a restaurant drill down for restaurants. So, for example, you would say you could. This is going to sound a little bad. This is maybe even worse than the girls thing. But you could ask. You could say which of your friends are from India and which Indian food restaurants do they like, and then you get the super drilled. This is Facebook's example, not mine.
Really?
Yeah, they did
said
this on stage.
First sort all by all Indian friends.
No, first they searched for spicy food, and then they searched. Then they limited that to people from India, or friends of people who have friends in India, or something like that. So you can do friends of friends and all sorts of other stuff.
Can you do racist searches on Facebook?
You can do racist searches on Facebook. Yeah. Yeah, so there you go. It seems like it's you could also search by relationship. So one of the other things is if you met somebody at a party, you don't really know who they are, but you know that they have three kids and they went to Wesleyan. then you could say, who is a friend of Wes's who went to Wesleyan and has three kids? And it'll pop up with a list of people.
I'm really confused about who these people are now.
Well, I don't think you have any friends who have three kids and went to Wesleyan. I was just using you as a stand-in for someone else.
Good.
Yeah. So, yeah, that's a thing. Facebook. Oops,
okay. No phone. I think it was a bigger thing that so many people expected Facebook to announce a phone, and they have outright said they are not making a phone, and whether you can, you know, try to
read between the lines,
dance around the words. They, one, are sure, unless they're straight up lying, are not making a physical phone, and they already had their attempted partnerships with
HTC
and other hardware makers, and it's unlikely that they will make a phone. It doesn't make sense for them to make a phone.
So coming into this, I was not expecting, like, I was not optimistic that they were going to be showing something that I was even remotely interested in. And this is actually kind of interesting. And while I can't see using it on a daily basis as a life changing thing, it could be useful occasionally, which is better than I was hoping for.
Sure, so. The fact that they made a big hour long press conference about it is one to, you know, obviously reassure advertisers and shareholders.
Well, so that is the other side of this. You mentioned advertisers. The other side of this product as a consumer-facing product is that there will be an advertising component to this as well. Very clearly. I mean, Facebook doesn't do anything for consumers that they don't also do for advertisers. So advertisers will have the same exact functionality, which they probably already have, to say, I want to advertise to people who like
Spicy food. Also from India.
And are from India in San Francisco.
Buy a cheeseburger.
Right.
Wait, don't buy a cheeseburger.
No, no cheeseburgers, dude.
That is what you absolutely should not do.
It
seems like people, at least people on Twitter, seem to think the big thing to come out of this is that it's using Bing search, or at least Facebook is using Bing search related to this, and as opposed to Google search. And that's like a diss in Google's face.
But Microsoft has invested in Facebook. Yeah. There's no surprises there. Microsoft owns, what, a small percentage of Facebook?
Very, very small percentage of Facebook. $500 million investment.
Well, $500 million investment early, though. So,
right. Yeah.
The I don't think that's a particularly big deal. Yeah, speaking of kind of racist advertising and searches, have you guys noticed that late night ads are getting, you know.
Don't watch late night.
You don't watch, like, South Park on late at night? You don't record that stuff?
You're talking about late night TV. Yeah, no.
It's always been bad. Okay.
Netflix and Xfinity.
I just remember Girls Gone Wild ads in the Comedy Central heyday of
It's still just as bad, but now they're a little bit racist in addition to being sleazy. So it's like dating sites and stuff like that. Real specific.
Oh, like do they still have the ads for the phone, like, sex lines?
Yeah, they have that.
Or the phone, lines. Like, meetups or
Call
whatever.
Us and have fun tonight.
They imply so much, but you probably just are calling some random person who, you know, and you pay a ton of money, and you don't even get anything good from it.
Man, you sound really disappointed, Wes.
You sound like,
I mean,
should you do a review of this product category?
Sound a little burned.
Not speaking from experience or anything. Uh-huh. I'm just saying, seems like a raw deal.
Which one did you call?
Seems like
horny Alaskan ladies or locals in your area?
That was Evangeline Lilly 10 years ago.
That would be worth it.
Well,
Tina Fey. From 1985.
No,
I wish I could remember the name of one of those things now because they're always hilarious.
It seems like joke. Like if they came on during Saturday Night Live, you'd think it was a joke ad.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah. Should we talk about CBS and the Dish Network and CNET and
sure.
Controversy?
First, let's talk about the Hopper.
Yeah. So, did you guys see this?
We didn't see the Hopper.
You're not DVR guys at all.
Nope. Yeah. I don't want to pay for the Boopa Boops.
I like the Hopper. I like the idea of I like the name, the Hopper. It seems like it would be either some sort of thing that moved really in a massive like a conveyance from Metal Gear.
That's something that Dennis Hopper kind of owned before then.
Well, he's dead now. So.
I know that.
Yeah,
but the Hopper.
Yeah, the Hopper. So the Hopper is a satellite receiver with DVR with massive capacity, and I think four tuners. Is that right? It can record four things at once. Something like I've had two tuner DVRs for the better part of 10 years now. Ever so rarely encountered a situation where one thing was recording on one channel and I wanted to record something on another channel and I did that and then there was a third channel that I wanted to record something on. That never happens.
And yet
you're pack ratting at that point.
And yet we, you know, living within one tuner household, totally fine.
Well, so the place that you also have on demand, which fills in a lot of gaps. The place that you might want to do that is if you're like watching football or something like that, and Saturday, you know, Sunday rolls around, Saturday college football games, there's 16 games on. You maybe care about two or three teams. I can see it in that case. Politics junkies want to watch debate coverage on four channels.
Right. And Dish has NFL exclusives.
So, there is a use case for that. And sometimes boneheaded network TV programming people put four things on at the same time that are all tied to the same demographic, because NBC wants to fuck over Fox and Fox wants to fuck over ABC and ABC.
Will the Hopper let you do the Situation Room where you can have all the feeds on one screen?
I don't know about
once?
That. That's interesting.
Because that's what I want for like election coverage.
You want the big wall.
I want a big wall of a grid of at least four channels.
I can see that. I think that's a good idea. So anyway, the Hopper, the thing about the Hopper that the Dish Network is doing that's getting sued by everyone, though, is that they're doing a 30-second fast-forward skip that's basically like smart. TiVo has done 30-second fast-forward skips for a long time. Replay TV did 10, 15 years ago. What Dish Network is doing is they're watching the stream and they're being a little smarter, so it just automatically fast-forwards through commercials. So as opposed to the TiVo where I just hold down the button and watch
boop, boop, boop.
And then mash the button and it rolls back to just at the start of the commercial. With the Dish Network, you just press the skip commercial button and you're done.
It knows. It's smart. Smart advertising is skipping. And this is what television channels and executives are
networks.
Fearful. Networks are very fearful.
I wouldn't say fearful. I would say terrified or mortified is probably closer to
it. Scared shitless.
Scared shitless is good, yeah. So CBS and ABC and I think most of the other big networks are suing Dish Network over this technology because they're basically saying, look, it's theft.
But CNET
enter
really
CNET.
Liked it.
Yeah. So CNET does the best of CES awards every year. And just to be perfectly clear about how – I don't know how specifically how the CNET awards work, but many of the awards
– informed editors make a judgment.
The sarcastic air quotes.
The best things – the best things they've seen at CES.
But the way they usually work, or at least they did in the magazine days.
You mean you look at a picture of it?
No. It's not that bad.
Not CNET. I'm not talking about CNET.
Oh, no. I think for CNET, because there's so much to see and you can't obviously see everything, people come to them, to their booth.
Well, it's not even that they come to their booth. It's that they send the products in before the show starts.
Yeah.
Typically. Maybe not particularly, not necessarily in CNET, but all the magazine awards, in order to make print deadlines for CES, you have to have that stuff crazy early. Anyway, CNET picked the Hopper. They voted as a staff, and the winner of the best of CES amongst their staff.
Was this like really the number one best of CES, or was it just one of those best of CES? Here are 50 things that are the best of CES.
According to The Verge,
okay,
who had an exclusive breaking from unnamed sources.
Exclusive.
Breaking.
Unnamed sources.
The Hopper was chosen by the staff, independent of outside influence,
as
the best of CES,
as
the number one.
Wow. Really?
So
I'm skeptical of that choice. I mean, I didn't see the Hopper, and I'm not a DVR person, but there are many other things up for contention.
Well, but they only –
that's what they chose?
I think they only include things that are actually on display at CES. So like things like the Oculus, which are in a hotel suite someplace, are off out of consideration.
No. That's still part of CES.
Oh, was it at the
Venetian has CES signs.
Okay. So they – but were they in a hotel suite?
They were in a hotel suite, but it was still part of the official CES like institution.
Are you sure?
Yeah. When I walked down the hall,
suite,
it said CES,
oh, okay,
and booth numbers.
Okay.
Yeah.
Just to go back a second.
Because they weren't in the list of exhibitors.
Floor.
No, no. But when you search for a list of exhibitors, they weren't listed either.
Looking on CNET's website, it looks like the Hopper was just one of their best of CES picks.
So
that's what I thought.
That's what CNET says. What I'm telling you is that The Verge had breaking unnamed sources that said it was actually the winner of best of CES.
I think this is fancy award semantics. I hate those awards where they go that they give 50 best of awards.
So the report said that word came down from the president of CBS, which owns CBS Interactive, which owns CNET.
Leslie Moonves.
I think what his friends call him.
Which also owns
Mr.
GameSpot.
And Giant Bomb and Comic Vine, a bunch of other Chow, TV.com. Many properties. It's a, you know, they have a lot of the internet. Came down and said, no, can't do that.
Nope.
Denied. Revote. Do it over again. And the Hopper can't be considered.
Your opinion is wrong.
No. It said that basically what they said was, we're in litigation with these people, and you can't review, air quote, a product that we're in litigation with the parent company of. So
because there could be a perceived conflict of interest.
I don't think that – I think that they – it is unclear what the motivation for this
because
was.
Because you will like it. Because you are – all signs say you are liking it.
Right.
And you can kind of see, at least like from an optimistic point of view, you know, the CBS legal team coming to them and saying, hey, this is bad for our case. You need to do something. And then the president doing something about it. And then it just completely spiraling into, you know, terribleness after that.
Well, yeah. So the problem is that this is a breakdown of editorial independence for CNET. There have been many reactions to this on the interweb this last week. Some of them are I think fair. Some of them are completely blown out of proportion. I feel like this is a gross violation of CNET's editorial independence.
Does it warrant resigning?
So does it warrant resigning is a tough question. If I were working there and I were young enough that I had money in the bank to live for a few months and get freelance and stuff like that, I would have hit the door. If I had three kids and two of them were in college, I would immediately start looking for a job. But it's difficult as you get older to stroll at the moment something bad happens. I can't imagine that people are going to stay there for long. I mean, we've already seen a couple of people resign, and it makes it – I mean, I think a lot of the problem – so just to be fair, CBS has said, hey, we're not going to interfere with news coverage of this stuff in the future. But reviews – fuck you guys. You do what we say.
And so they've suddenly created a line that says product reviews are not journalism, but news is.
Right. This is why we're talking about this, actually. I think, actually, product reviews in the context of a consumer electronics site targeted toward people who buy stuff, not people who are investors or analysts, is much more important than news. You know, product reviews, people go out and spend their money based on product reviews.
Much important than news, the way what news is today.
Well, the way we treat news, definitely. Even the way people who I think report news, if your product reviews are no good or are crooked, even worse, then why should anybody trust your site at all? Is the way I look at it. So it's an unfortunate situation. CBS posted a explanation, not apology. I mean, the good news is Razer ended up getting the
Razer Edge was
the
best
Razer
of show.
Edge is the best of show now. The dish had to be recalibrated.
Okay. Anyway, let's also talk about the other big story
in editorial
independence this week.
Are you going to talk? Is this about?
This is about a milestone year.
For Scientology.
Milestone year for Scientology.
Scientology is doing great.
Oh my, new churches they open?
Is it 2,000?
I heard there's one in San Francisco.
So many. And those commenters. How positive.
Do we have a local Scientology church?
Oh, sure, of course.
Can we go?
No, don't go. No. If you go there, do they do
Sunday service?
Yes, they do service any day. You can get your thetans tested.
Ooh.
You're a prime candidate, Wes. You're in your mid-20s. You're single. You're single, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, you're single. You're looking for your path in life. So they could help you find that. You should do an in-depth report.
I'm intrigued.
By talking about this now, they won't let you in. They'll know. So The Atlantic has started doing sponsored content and advertorial posts. I've always found them kind of distasteful. You know, I've fought over the years with different publishers.
Have you ever been fooled by advertorial posts? I mean, prior to this week, in either print or web?
I find that it's difficult to fool me. Like, because we worked in magazines and know what to look for, the sponsored content or advertorial at the top of the page, it's really tough. I just find the idea of paid content masquerading as editorial content to be very distasteful.
The spectrum of sponsored posts and how they're presented is really interesting. They can be very glaring that it is a sponsored post.
Like a magazine fold-out for a car.
Exactly.
Like
the paper is going to be different. It's not going to have the actual page numbers on there. And it looks very ad...
It doesn't use the same font and graphic design style as the rest of the publication.
And it can go all the way to having the same writers as the edit staff, the same creative treatment for the art, and then a very small signposting of it being a sponsored post.
So in my perspective, advertorial that looks – the line is graphic design and writers. If the graphic design is different, if it is obviously a different type of content than what is typically in the magazine, that's okay. The people who are writing on it, if it's an editorial magazine where you're doing product reviews or news or whatever, the people who are writing on the magazine or the website shouldn't work on the advertorial, obviously.
So we said specifically what we're talking about?
No, I'm getting ready to.
Okay.
That's next. So what happened was The Atlantic started doing sponsored content, and they're just dumping it into
online.
Their CMS. Online, yes. Just dumping it into their content management system.
Are we sure about that?
Looks like it, yeah.
It
was a normal
like
page.
It has a banner. It had a little
a tiny little
indicator.
Header. Yeah.
Which I noticed immediately, but most people said was not nearly...
No, I did not notice immediately.
...striking enough. I think it wasn't, you know, as big or bold as it should have been, but I did see it, and I was like, okay,
the mistake isn't that was – so they ran a sponsored piece about Scientology. So people were upset on two different fronts, right? People were upset because, a lot of people really don't like Scientology. I'm not going to get into that. I feel like if you want to believe in space gods that come down and make people sad, that's totally cool.
If you want to believe in your stupid religion,
no.
Will Smith.
I feel that different – I have strong feelings about this that are not part germane to this conversation.
So many midichlorians.
Exactly. I don't believe in midichlorians either, Norm. The other side of it is that The Atlantic did a particularly terrible job signposting this. So it had the same header treatment as editorial columns on The Atlantic's website. It had the same – by header treatment, I mean headline, byline, timestamp, like comments, tweet, all that stuff. It had the same comment structure that their normal posts do. Use the same fonts, use the same image styles. All of that stuff was designed to look like a piece of editorial content. So if you, A, were insane and didn't look at it and say, oh, God, this is a piece of advertorial, or B, didn't see the little thing that said sponsored content, it was highlighted in yellow, so it was pretty bright, and then had a link next to it to describe what it is, then you would have been you could have been duped into thinking that, hey, someone at The Atlantic, who also is the head of the Church of Scientology, is really into Scientology now, and it's a good thing.
No, it didn't make me say, because I usually didn't see the sponsored post thing, but it didn't make me think, wow, Scientology is great. All it made me think is, wow, they're really reaching for terrible stories.
Yeah.
It reflected poorly on The Atlantic, not positively on Scientology.
Either way, it reflected poorly on The Atlantic. So controversy ensued, as it does. Like I said, it seemed from responses to my Twitter feed, it seemed like 70% of people really don't like Scientology that responded, and maybe 30% were publishing people who were like, this is fucking terrible advertorial. I mean, I
think the biggest backlash I saw was against the comments, which were clearly also planted along with the story.
You don't say.
At least the initial batch of them, I think – I assume the comments were open and people quickly,
yeah,
they saw this post and it spread on Twitter and everything.
Were they curating comments to only have positive comments?
They were removing positive comments, negative. After a while, they couldn't keep up because once it hit Reddit, then they had to just shut the whole thing down.
When I clicked on it, it only had 9 comments, yeah. And it was like right when people started posting it. So I don't know if they had deleted negative comments or if those were all just fake plants.
They deleted negative. I don't necessarily think they had to be planted. They could have just said, hey, here's our mailing list. Go post positive stuff here. And I mean, whether that's plants or grassroots, it depends on how you look at things, grassroots. The thing that they did do was they shut the whole thing down pretty quickly.
And they said, whoops, we messed up.
We handled this poorly. And I mean, in defense of the editorial staff at The Atlantic, if they even knew that this was going to happen, which they may not have.
I don't think they did, seeing I saw Alexis Madrigal tweet something that I believe was pertaining to this, and he responded to somebody on Twitter and said, I don't know anything about it. Let me look into it.
Which is a good – I mean, like, there are three ways to look at this. One, if you're an editor on a publication like this, that ignorance is good because you can come out and say, look, I have no idea what the fuck they did, but I'm going to get to the bottom of it. Two is that they tell you – which seems to be what happened at CBS. They said, hey, you have to do this, and everyone from the president of CBS Interactive down to the editorial staffs protested. And then they had to do it anyway because, you know, at some point it's do this or you're going to be fired.
Mm-hmm. The sponsored content explanation on The Atlantic does say very explicitly, like, has no involvement with editorial staff.
As it should be. Because the worst case is that they do this regardless of you saying, hey, this is a bad idea. And then you have to figure out what the fix is.
Do you think sponsored posts should – advertisers should have to say how much they paid for a sponsored post?
I don't think that's germane. I mean, I'm okay with not knowing. I don't think anybody cares. I mean, I care about that as a media, as a guy who like, I'm just curious to see what the Atlantic gets for a sponsored post from Scientology.
But not as a reader.
I don't think it's germane to readers.
As a reader, something formatted like an article is never germane.
I don't think it's. I think it's wildly inappropriate to format something as an article and pass it off as sold content. Unless, I mean, there are places that do it correctly, like the sponsored post that they do on Boing Boing that lead off with, "This is a sponsored post. It has a different color background than the rest of the blog." Like that, I don't have a massive problem with that. I still find it a little bit distasteful. But
and you know, the same thing goes on the other side with user generated content when you have something like. On the BuzzFeed network, and everything's generated by users.
Yeah,
and you have zero differentiation between what's editorially driven and what's user driven. I think everything is approved.
Well, it's
at
curated.
Least. It's curated, but you know.
Should we talk about the BuzzFeed thing? Because there's a little bit of a brouhaha with BuzzFeed and Reddit going right now.
What's going on there?
There are a couple things I'm curious about on this. If we
on the Atlantic?
Stay on it for a couple minutes.
Yeah.
One, did either of you guys see what the post looked like? Linked from the home page or whatever page it was on.
My hunch reference. Would be that it was linked from an ad. Usually you link that from an ad unit.
Because I'm curious if it was presented, you know, like a story as well on the home page.
I think people would have flipped out much more if it had been in like the main blog feed or whatever for the Atlantic.
Probably. Another thing I was thinking about for formatting of this stuff, how do you think standards have changed for this over the past 50 years or so? Because if you look back at magazine ads from like the 50s, 60s, probably 70s, it like everything was super text heavy and like ads were all narrative based and it was basically like magazine copy written really creatively
by Don Draper.
Yeah, exactly, to promote a product, and then there would be like one image or something kind of as a lead off.
To realize people don't want to read.
Sure, but has that changed the acceptability of long form like advertising stuff?
I don't think so. I think long form ad content, like Apple has done that in you know the past 2 decades and has had success. And you can buy you know big full page ads in newspapers. That's basically copy.
Because I mean, if you think about you guys led off the conversation talking about you know sponsored stuff in magazines.
Yeah.
And those, like I don't read too many magazines these days, but I can't really imagine those looking more. Fitting in better with the magazine than ads of 50 years ago did because they were, you know, very close to looking like a standard.
And you're right.
Page.
I think a campaign would probably be more effective if it went for the old 50s, 60s ad look and called, you know, called that part of the brain.
Then it was intentionally retro.
Then something that tried to look like it was on, you know, the part of the magazine and on the page before.
Here's the my problem with this kind of advertorial has traditionally been that if your goal is to fool a reader into thinking they're reading, like if the only way this ad succeeds is if you fool your reader into thinking that they're reading something that was written by the editorial staff, then that says something horrible about both what the advertiser and the publication think about their readers. Like I think that the readers at the Atlantic are part of the reason there's been an outcry for this, and it doesn't happen in a lot of other magazines. I mean, I don't want to name specifics because I don't know specific cases, but I know that for a long time, like the kind of lower end women's magazines did a lot of advertorial that was really specifically designed to look like editorial content in the magazine, and it worked because that market didn't give a shit. When you're talking about a magazine like the Atlantic, where it's a highly educated. Intelligent audience, they're going to revolt. And if you think you can fool your audience, then you can't. Then you have fucked up really bad. And I think, I mean, if I were a reader of a publication that did that regularly, I would not read that publication anymore.
So maybe the difference is 50 years ago, that type of advertising was just so commonplace, so standard that everybody knew. That it was there was a distinction between editorial and advertising,
but it wasn't designed to look like. I don't think that ads. If you're talking about like the ads in the back of Boy's Life, I don't think that those were designed to trick the reader into thinking they were editorial, like they were written by the magazine, part of the magazine. They're clearly ads. I think that first off, advertising has changed dramatically in the last 50 years, right? It's gone from promise-based ads that say, "Hey, this is going to make you this is going to make your hair stop falling out," to "Hey, this is going to make you to brand type advertising that says, "Hey, drinking Coke makes you cooler," or "This
More
Toyota
like this person
is
in this picture."
Yeah, exactly. So it's gone from a straight out claim that I think a lot of that stopped because of truth in advertising rules in the 60s and 70s to And I could be completely off base here because I took these classes 25 years ago now, so it's not fresh. To the more promise based brand based advertising that encourages you, hey, buy our product, it makes you cool, and that is much. And the advertorial is the polar opposite of that. It's instead of being, hey, buy this product, it makes you cool, it is, hey, this thing does a specific thing. So it is a throwback to your 50s style advertising. I think it's just really disingenuous to try to fool your audience into thinking, hey,
so
we
approve of this. What's the deal with BuzzFeed
So anyway, The Atlantic apologized. That's the takeaway.
They said, hey, it was a real apology. It wasn't a half-assed, you know.
They literally said, we messed up.
Yeah, they start off with, we messed up. It wasn't we need to make money, deal with it.
Kind of. Yeah. No, it was, and they pulled the ad. They stopped doing the campaign. They're going to reevaluate and come back with a better way to
you
do it.
Think they gave the money back?
I'm sure they had to, yeah. Or at least did it make good.
You know, Scientology is the big winner in all this.
I mean, the other way to say this is if the ad rep said, hey, this is going to be a terrible debacle, are you sure you want to do it? Then good luck getting your money back from those guys. I don't know. The BuzzFeed's I don't know the specifics of the BuzzFeed Reddit thing, but I think it has to do with image attribution. So BuzzFeed does a lot of these lists that are like the 50
cutest puppies.
Yeah. Or the best dogs,
penguins.
Dogs fighting birds, or you know whatever. And most of those, a list. Significant number
wow.
of those images come from Reddit, and
list.
They're rarely attributed.
List, no, they're attributed as Reddit,
or rather than to the specific user.
Sure.
And if you can even find out which user originally submitted the image, good luck.
Good luck.
Yeah. So Reddit was pissed off about something, and BuzzFeed is like, you know, once it hits Reddit, it's fair game, and I don't know where I don't have strong feelings about this either way, but it's kind of on topic with the other stuff we've talked about far today.
Dumbing down of the internet.
What, you don't like lists?
Just consolidate everything.
What are the 55 worst songs to die to? Think about that.
Happy birthday to you.
Happy birthday is number one, according to BuzzFeed. Number two is Tomorrow from Annie, which is just a bad song to listen to anytime.
Yeah, I would really be pissed if I died to that song.
Yeah. Yeah, that's not like, as you're doing the Groundhog Day off into the gravel quarry, Tomorrow comes on the radio. Do you slam on the brakes or do you try to jump out the car before before it goes over the cliff?
I thought you were saying you're already over the cliff.
No, you're it's almost too late. You're on the Thelma Louise path.
I think you just start cursing.
God damn it. Maybe tomorrow will be better.
All right. Let's do a quick Reddit check-in because Arnold Schwarzenegger is doing an AMA right now.
Oh my God!
What's the best thing Arnold Schwarzenegger has said so far?
Someone asked Arnold Schwarzenegger on Reddit, "Arnold, are you making Twins 2?" And he says,
"Yes,
we will make Twins 2 with Danny DeVito
and Eddie Murphy."
Wait, what?
It's called Triplets.
It had been announced before, I think, but somebody was checking in saying, "Is that still
totally
on track?" And
thing.
He says, "Hell yeah,
that's a great idea."
Can Danny DeVito has literally, he has gotten so much better. Like, he was always awesome. He gets better every year.
I think he just found a way to play his character from Taxi again.
Not
but
Always
his character
Sunny?
From Taxi
but,
is super
grosser.
Was really, like, had nuance, sadness, and, I mean, he was crass, but there was depth to that character.
Well, also, like,
in Always Sunny, he's just a bad person.
Sure, he just gets to play I mean, most sitcoms have a tendency to, as they go on, just embellish the most ridiculous aspects of every character and play those up. Like Joey from Friends got stupider every year.
Yeah, Ross got whinier every year.
The characters in It's Always Sunny just get they start off as really mean narcissists.
Awful.
At the beginning and just become the absolute craziest, most self-obsessed, pathetic people ever. And it's funny.
Yeah, it's really good. Really good.
And I think, Danny DeVito just found the way to play that like creepy troll character as extreme as he could.
So has Danny DeVito always been this crass and he just had to wait for the world to catch up? Or has he gotten crasser as he's gotten older?
Have you seen Throw Mama from the Train? Mama from the Train?
No.
I mean, he's pretty weird in that.
It's weird, but it's not crass.
It's not. But
it's just bizarre.
But he's still playing like the little weirdo guy. I mean,
he took a gift and turned it into a career.
Him as Penguin, like that was
Oswald Cobblepot.
That was when the writing was on the wall, right? Like that was Danny DeVito.
Yeah, but
from then on,
there were some real physical deformities there. In addition to being very short, like if having flippers is going to fuck you up, man.
Yeah, but he still bites a dude's nose off.
Well, I mean, and that was pre-Tyson biting Holyfield's ear off. So that was like, that was early cannibalism.
You don't see a lot of noses being bitten off in movies.
Well, not outside of the zombie, you know, the zombie genre. Microsoft Research rolled out this interesting thing yesterday, the day before, or a week ago for you guys. I don't know when the hell it was. Called the Illuma Room. Did you see the video for this?
Tell me about the Illuma
Room. I sent you a link to this.
Yeah, tell me about the Illuma Room.
So the video shows a guy sitting on a couch with an Xbox controller, and he says, "Xbox, go big." It's an unfortunate choice of words. But what happens is the Kinect then maps the room. So it takes note of where all the things are positioned in the room. And then a projector comes on, and it shows information that would be outside the screen projected on the room in a way that's perspective correct for, like, the plants and shelves and all the stuff that's in the room. It's a project out of Microsoft Research.
Okay.
So, for example, when he was playing Halo, or a first-person shooter that looked awfully like, a lot like Halo, the room showed, like, kind of like a, it was almost like a Photoshop, you know, when you do like an edge, find edges Photoshop filter, mm-hmm. and you kind of get that, just the bare outline of buildings and stuff in a photo. It showed that projected on the room around the TV. So instead of the TV, even though it was already a big 60-inch TV in the room, it made what he was looking at much, 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 much bigger. It was a really cool demo.
Sounds like a cool demo. I cannot imagine how this will be used day to day.
You'd have to have a spectacularly dark room for it to work in the real world, because your normal rooms aren't particularly reflective enough to do projection on that looks good. But it was more, it wasn't, the thing that was interesting to me that spoke to me about the video was it seemed to reflect the way your eye works. So if you think about the way your eye works, the corneal density, the density of rods and cones in your cornea is very strong in the middle, mm-hmm. where we have the best vision.
Focus.
And then it as you get further from the fovea, is that right? It gets more and more diffuse, the rods and the cones. So you look at the center thing, which in this case would be the TV, and then the rest of it is just filling in some more information for your peripheral vision.
Information about?
So where people are shooting from. So when somebody shot from off the screen, you'd see the line come in for the tracer, and then it would come across the screen, hit you, but you would have much better information about where it was from looking at the video.
Okay. That's cool.
Now, if they can actually do this in the real world, it's a whole different thing. I thought this was pretty cool. This is something I would, if you could do this with an Xbox or perhaps the next Xbox, I would sign up for that.
All I can think about is how much gamers are going to bitch about this new dividing line between core games and, you know, immersive games or whatever they're going to call them. And
Illuma Room,
right,
I think, like, is the name.
And how many Halos and Gears of Wars are going to support this as an extra feature? And they're like, you don't have to use it, but, you know, Microsoft's going to mandate, okay, so many games, you know, for the Xbox.
Or first-party games all have it. Yeah.
Right, yeah. I mean, and maybe this isn't actually going to turn out to be a feature of the next Xbox. Who knows?
A lot of times Microsoft Research stuff ends up never turning into real products at all.
No, what they do is they have a budget and just free reign to do stuff. And then when actual product departments need things to make their products cool, they'll just tap into, oh, we want to use that.
Hey, I remember seeing this from a Microsoft Research video 10 years ago.
Yeah, let's see how far that's come along. Oh, we need a way to demonstrate, sell our new cameras or webcams. Okay, yeah. We'll use, you know, new interactive
webcams. We can put mustaches on people, productized.
Yeah.
Disney announced something this morning. I don't know the details on this because it was happening as we were, like, turning on the podcast. But I don't even remember what it's called.
Disney Infinity?
Really? That's what they called it?
Infinity.
Like, as in to infinity.
I think Disney owns enough stuff for that to be an appropriate name.
Well, if you look at, like, Kingdom Hearts.
Well, describe what Disney Infinity is.
Yes.
So Disney Infinity is basically Activision's Skylanders, but for Disney.
So you can buy Disney action figures?
So selling figures.
I can put Mickey Mouse on my Portal of Power?
From various series. Okay. And then Jack Mickey in. And he's going to load up Mickeyverse, and you're going to be able to play some kind of video game, you know, in Mickey World.
So it's like an e-card.
Mr. Incredible goes in, and you play in Mr. Incredible, the Incredibles world.
So is this a PC thing, or is this a Xbox thing?
I'm sure it'll be consoles.
Multi-platform.
I'm sure it'll be, you know, PS3, Xbox.
Did they announce, like, initial characters?
So they've announced.
I'm intrigued. It is the same format. It is a collectible figurine that has some sort of RFID or NFC chip in it that you put on a base that connects it to Xbox, PS3, Wii, GameCube.
Exactly. Probably not GameCube.
Really? Oh, come on. But I assume Wii U, probably.
They've said they're launching with The Incredibles, Monsters University, and Pirates of the Caribbean. But there will be other launch series. They're just not talking about them yet.
So is this going to be one game or a whole shitload of games? Or is it just like an MMO that you can drop your dudes in and that then Mickey's your pet in your Disney Infinity MMO?
So from what I've read, I think it'll be one game. It might vary by, you know, by platform somewhat.
It's just a franchise, yeah.
But there will be – so like in Skylanders, I haven't played it. But from what I gather, there's kind of one – like overarching world, and depending on which character you're using, you can access different parts of it, right? You can level up each Skylander, but you need to use a certain ability or have a certain, just be playing with a certain character to do certain quests.
You might have to have a wind strength in order to go into a specific temple or something like
exactly,
that.
Exactly, something like that. So this game, it sounds like they're breaking it into two parts, and one of them is like the in-world stuff, so you can only mess around in the Pirates world as Jack Sparrow. You can't do like a Kingdom Hearts funky crossover.
That's kind of a bummer.
So it's kind of like Disney World or Disneyland, except you can only ride certain rides if you're wearing a certain costume.
But then it has another component that is probably, it sounds kind of like minigame stuff.
Okay.
And those are where you'll do like Mr. Incredible boxes Jack Sparrow.
You must be this Jack Sparrow to ride this ride.
Right. So that's probably going to be like the campaign adventure component. Mm. And then this other one sounds like it'll either be multiplayer or mini games or something else. And that's where you'll have all your crossover stuff.
The challenge with this stuff is you have to, like, there's a real temptation, I would think, on the side of the faceless multinational corporation to be super duper evil with this. Because, like, if you have to be Jack Sparrow to ride the Pirates of the Caribbean portion of the game, that means that if you don't have Jack Sparrow or Orlando Bloom or whoever, you can't go into that part of the game. You won't be able to finish the game.
And those are the rare ones.
And those are the, yeah, exactly. Or even, it doesn't even matter if they're the rare ones. Even if they're $5 each, you pay $60 for the game, and then you get, it comes with Mickey and Donald.
It will make a lot of money.
Well, of course.
It will make a ton of money.
It sounds like it also has some element of like custom game building in it, so you can potentially create your
own. User-created stuff?
Yeah.
So who's developing this? Is it all hands on at Disney, or is it
Avalanche Software is making the game?
Who did?
And they are owned by Disney.
Okay.
They've made quite a few like licensed games. Apparently, they did the Toy Story 3 game, which was
well received for a decent Toy Story 3 game. Yeah.
So right. Yeah.
Okay.
It sounds like it'll be fun for kids.
There you go.
Potentially sell a few million figures.
Last thing on our news front this week, Wes. Last week you wrote a story, maybe week before last at this point, but I don't think we've talked about it yet. Now, one of the things that was a certainty when I was a child and going through school is that below a certain temperature, 0 degrees Kelvin, there was no colder temperature.
That's why it's absolute zero.
Yeah, absolute zero.
Absolutely
negative
the lowest.
273 Celsius or 373 something. Very, very cold. Colder than liquid nitrogen, colder than liquid helium.
It's absolute.
Absolute zero. Now, shit's changed.
It's no longer absolute. Exactly.
But it's a little confusing. Can we talk about this some?
I'll try to remember it.
I know.
All the CES.
Springing this on you after you've been pummeled by Idiocracy for a week. Now, the way people get things close to absolute zero now is with lasers, cooling lasers, right? And it has something to do with arranging the atoms in a specific lattice and limiting their movement and stuff like that using
exactly
the lasers.
Exactly. So
when things are not moving,
that's they're cold. Zero.
Right. So heat is movement. And these researchers, these scientists, basically created a really complex, I guess, laser array to hold these molecules, I believe, in an extremely rigid formation, but then also control how close they were to one another.
Okay.
And basically, the way they described it, they kind of had a temperature roll around effect, where the way we describe temperature, these molecules are infinitely hot.
Okay. So does this mean when you flip to the other side, it's like all of a sudden the mustaches are wearing the molecules are wearing mustaches and are like evil versions of themselves, and they radiate cold transfers instead of heat transferring, or is it literally just like when you get things moving at not at all unexpected things happen and it's weird and bizarre?
Unfortunately, I don't remember it well enough to explain it very well.
I put a question mark next to it.
It seems more to me like the best example I can give is like liquid nitrogen being extremely cold, but you know, it feels like a burn when you are exposed to it. It is like that, but super fucking complex.
But with a lot of math. Okay, fair enough. We will go no further. I guess that's it for news, unless anything else has happened. Let's check in with Arnold.
Check
in with Arnold. So someone asked Arnold what his favorite movie line...
Wait, is he actually responding with writing out his answers?
Some of them he is writing on his iPad.
He's writing, like with finger drawing?
Or with a pen.
Stylus?
You don't know.
He's writing it out on his iPad and uploading images?
For some of them, yeah.
Really?
He's doing like half and half.
That is crazy.
So someone says, if you had to pick your favorite line from any movie, what would it be? And Arnold says, from someone else's movie, do I feel lucky? Well, do you, punk?
It's pretty good.
And he says, from my movies, I'll be back.
Okay. The obvious choice.
Yeah. But from his new movie, The Stand, The Last Stand, his favorite line is, you fucked up my day off.
Wow, that is the perfect, hey, I want to peddle my new movie, yet still not seem like a total sellout whore. That's great. Good for Arnold.
Hey, you know Zack Snyder's going to make a Star Wars movie?
Nope.
Then why is Vulture doubling down? Wes, tell me the story.
Vulture doubled down.
What? Hold on. Vulture said...
So yesterday, Vulture put up a blog news that said...
Isn't Vulture the site that accidentally told everybody where John McAfee was so that he could get arrested?
No, that was...
Vice.
Vice.
Okay.
Also a V site.
So I don't know exactly how much Hollywood insider cred Vulture has. I don't read Vulture. I don't really read Hollywood stuff. But anyway, they put up a post that
good
says...
Good policy, Wes.
Zack Snyder is developing an offshoot Star Wars movie, which is not in itself far-fetched because... So they've hired... is it Michael Arndt? Is that the name of the...
Yep.
So he's writing Episode 7. But they've also hired Lawrence Kasdan and someone else, Lawrence Kasdan, who wrote or co-wrote
Empire
Strikes Back. Clearly the best Star Wars film.
Unquestionably.
So he and someone else are also working on a Star Wars movie that is said to probably not be one of the episodes. They're just writing some Star Wars thing.
The fact that they were even going to do that would be boggling, but believable.
So it's potentially going to be a spinoff. Which seems in line.
I would watch a Mandalorian. I would watch a Boba Fett Adventures movie.
Yes. So Vulture says that Zack Snyder is developing a Star Wars spinoff, not a part of the new trilogy, that features a group of seven Jedi, probably kicking lots of slow-mo ass on some planet, and it's based on Akira Kurosawa's Seven Samurai.
Which is really funny because Hidden Fortress. No.
Yep.
Well, no, but Star Wars, New Hope, is based on Hidden Fortress.
Sure. The Seven Samurai also influence Star Wars.
Well, clearly George Lucas had watched a lot of Kurosawa movies before he wrote Star Wars.
If someone said to me they're going to make a space Seven Samurai, Star Wars Seven Samurai, I would have said, fuck yeah. But they said Zack Snyder is making Star Wars Seven Samurai.
Hold on.
Let's wait till Man of Steel comes out. But yes.
I like Watchmen a lot. Watchmen is a fine adaptation of...
I disagree.
We can discuss this another time.
The point fake out
Zack Snyder's rep said that this is not true, and Vulture has now doubled down, saying that they take the accuracy of its reports very seriously, and while a piece published in the Hollywood Reporter this evening quotes Snyder's rep saying that the director is not involved in any way with new Star Wars, Vulture stands by its story. There it go.
I think I
totally believe that they want to do Disney wants to do many other Star Wars movies that are not episodes.
They're going to Marvel Universe this shit.
I think that's a good idea because even
Ant-Man meets the Ewoks.
Even if the new trilogy doesn't have a heavy emphasis on Luke, you know, Han Solo, all that
Snow
stuff,
White and the Seven Jawas.
Just doing not even saying that it's not like a part of a trilogy is saying this is a Star Wars movie and exploring
Cinderella. Well,
you would want that to be not the episodes. Episode 7, 8, 9 should follow the journey of the Skywalker family.
I think they probably have to just for like for fan reasons.
Or it could be the continuing story of R2-D2 and C-3PO. Let's be real. True. Star Wars to date has been the story of R2-D2 and C-3PO. The Anakin Skywalker nonsense is just, you know.
Well, it's supposed to be Luke's
side
story.
Story.
If you take the machete order.
I think that is – I think they will do, you know, something Skywalker with the new movies just because that is so integral to Star Wars. But obviously there's plenty of universe out there, plenty of fiction. And whether or not it's, you know, an adaptation of something written or just – or just something that kind of builds on all of the writing and movies and, you know, comics and all that kind of stuff that has kind of built the texture of that universe. Like, you can make some really awesome movies not linked to all the Skywalker stuff.
Oh, yeah.
And what that would mean is that they don't have to shoehorn things in that story. In those
Look, it's Boba Fett. It's Chewbacca.
They can have that stuff explored elsewhere.
Yeah, and I mean, like, making a movie just about a group of Jedi, you know, unattached to galactic importance, just like on a quest or something, that could be really awesome. A Star Wars movie with no Force stuff in it whatsoever, kind of like the new Star Wars 1313 game.
Yeah,
hopefully that comes out. You know, it could get canned because of the Disney buyout. Yeah. But supposedly that game is totally like no Force stuff.
Forces was great, and there was no Force stuff in Dark Forces.
So, I mean, there's totally potential there for some really awesome spin-off stuff if they have good writers and not Zack Snyder.
If you haven't played Dark Forces, don't go buy it because it doesn't hold up, but it was awesome back in the day. Say what you will about Zack Snyder. He hasn't been afraid to take on stuff that is going to make him absolutely loathed by the hardcore fan community.
And I'm kind of exaggerating, too. I don't completely hate him. I think Sucker Punch is maybe the most offensive movie I've ever seen.
It's really, really bad. Like, don't watch it. It's so bad. It doesn't even roll over to be funny. It's so bad. It's just awful. Yeah.
And, you know, I don't really like Watchmen. I do enjoy 300, and I liked Dawn of the Dead okay.
Dawn of the Dead was, I thought, good.
And so, yeah, I think he could potentially make a good Star Wars movie. It just, the idea of Zack Snyder adapting Kurosawa, just I can't really wrap my mind around that.
The thing is, Zack Snyder's kind of up and down, so if Man of Steel really sucks, the next thing will probably be pretty good. So, you know, we got that going for us.
It's just like the ultimate pop culture junkie adapting, like, classic art.
Are you saying he's this decade's McGee?
No. No.
Was McGee worse?
McGee's much worse.
Okay. Just making sure.
And this decade's pop culture junkie adapting movies is Quentin Tarantino, to be fair.
Probably.
I would be totally fine with Quentin Tarantino adapting Kurosawa.
I would be totally fine with Quentin Tarantino adapting Kurosawa into a Star Wars offshoot.
I don't know about that.
I think that would be, if it was like a hard R Star Wars movie.
If, on the bright side, if Zack Snyder does do a Star Wars movie, it'll look gorgeous.
Tales of Mace Windu. Because
that is his thing, right? Like, even the dumb owl movie probably had really awesome CG.
Did you watch the owl movie?
The Owls of Bahul.
Did you watch the owl movie?
I did not.
Okay. Let's not call it the dumb owl movie until we've all seen the owl movie.
I think we can reasonably guess that it's a dumb owl movie.
Some people
I'm
going to
come over
it.
To your all's place this weekend. We'll watch the owl movie.
It was a kid's movie, so like I'm sure it was, you know, good for its intended audience. And the trailers for it, like the CG, looked really good.
Yeah.
And Man of Steel looks good, like visually. Like
that trailer looks awesome.
Yeah, the scene where he's flying, especially in the atmosphere, looks really great.
And it delving into questions of his youth, and, you know,
300 maybe had too many like airbrushed abs, but still had a really strong visual identity.
A lot of slow motion heads getting chopped off there.
So if he does a Star Wars movie, it'll look really cool.
Well, the thing that he did with Watchmen and 300 was he took keyframes from the graphic novel and made. He did those super slow-mos to give you, oh, hey, it's the comedian getting blown out of the window in the opening scenes of the, you know, like that stuff was, anyway. Let's play some music and then we'll talk about, CES. I missed the button. Norman Chan and Wes Fenlon, you spent last week at the Consumer Electronics Show.
Dude.
Did you enjoy yourself?
Tremendously.
Did you eat Lotus of Siam?
Twice.
Twice.
Did you do the buffet or did you have the menu?
No. Buffet was so bad. We looked at the buffet. We did a walk around the very small buffet table, eyed the curries, and then said no.
So the buffet, the thing about the buffet is you got to go back a couple of times because it rotates in and out a lot.
Going back a couple of times is risky just because you might be stranded, as we were.
Oh, you Uber away from there now?
No Uber in Las Vegas.
Oh, then you arrange your cab.
Call cab. Takes
they'll call a cab.
45 minutes.
Okay, well, there you go.
We walked.
It was worth it.
It was worth it.
You walked away from there?
That's scary. And we walked back.
Walk back in.
We walked 30 minutes away, and then we walked 30 minutes back.
Wow.
And then
Little Siam was closed. You're exaggerating. It was not 30 minutes.
That was like 20 minutes. And then Little Siam was closed, and the owner or one of the guys who worked there had to give us a ride.
Wow, really?
He did not have to.
He did not have
to. Extremely graciously
gave us a ride and dropped us off on the strip.
We're going to send him some
by the circus.
And actually, while we had some nightmares, while we were waiting outside, I saw a guy like in a truck pick up a couple other people from outside the restaurant and drive them. And I thought, that's weird. That taxi doesn't have any markings or anything on it. I think that guy worked at the restaurant too and gave some other people a lift because no taxis were out there.
Like, they are very aware of their place in the world as it pertains to taxis and how scary it is there. Because for dinner, they have relationships with some cab companies that will always send somebody over. But at lunchtime, sometimes it's a little hard to get out.
It's a tough place to be.
So not only do they make the best Thai food in the country, they're really nice.
They're phenomenally nice. When you skipped the buffet at lunch, did they look at you like, really, you're skipping the buffet? That's crazy. See, when we went and we skipped the buffet at lunchtime once, they gave us the, really? Why would you skip the buffet? The buffet is fabulous, but maybe the buffet is going away. It's transitioning away. What did you have? What was the best thing you ate?
Everything.
Short rib Penang.
Short rib Penang is good. Do you have the
crispy duck? Not the duck Penang. Crispy duck with mint.
Ooh.
Garlic prawns.
Is it crispy all the way or just
crispy
the skin?
Garlic prawns. The duck is crispy on the skin and very tender. Okay.
Stuffed chicken wings.
Stuffed chicken wings.
Oh, like the angel wings with all the
some hot soup. Well, it's fiery.
That was probably my least
like Tom Yum Guy or one of those. Or
we got some egg noodles. We got some
What was the noodle? The really hot noodle we got the second time. That was the North
second time
Thai dish.
Fuckers. Yeah, it was something soy something. It was delicious.
That was really good.
Okay. It was all good.
I can't believe you went to the circus. You know, that's where I stayed the first time I went to Vegas for Comdex with ours years and years ago.
I'm sorry.
Our first year.
We didn't go inside. We waited outside the circus. You
got to go inside to the circus.
I don't want to go.
I don't think there are any clowns inside.
Yeah, there are.
Really?
It's fucking terrifying.
What?
It is a litany
Why
of
would
nightmares.
You have clowns walking around the casino.
So you remember the Ridley Scott Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas where they go to the circus and they're fucked up on ether.
Ridley Scott Terry Gilliam.
Sorry. They go into the circus. They're fucked up on ether and they're hallucinating and having a bad time.
That's what I don't want.
That's pretty much what it's like. Like there wasn't the colors were maybe brighter, but the actual hotel is terrifying. There's a trapeze act going like 24 hours a day. There's clowns. There's sometimes animals in there for no apparent reason. It is. And the terrible thing about the circus is behind the circus, there's more rooms. Like the hotel, there's a whole set of like cinder block buildings that are essentially like exterior door motels behind it that smell like water and smake damage pretty much all the time. That's where I stayed. It was the first trip to Vegas.
I think Fear and Loathing is the only movie that's ever made me nauseous.
I love Fear and Loathing. It's such a good movie.
Yeah. You know, I didn't really like it, partially because it kind of made me sick.
I can see that.
I think that was mostly it, actually. And just, it was so weird to me trying to mesh it with the book in my mind. Like, Johnny Depp's depiction of Hunter S. Thompson is probably really great, accurate, but it's not, like, the way he is written in the book.
It's not the way you
it's not the way I read him.
It's how
in
you
book.
It's how you would picture him, not how you read the character as it's written.
But just thinking about that movie and thinking about that being a real place is horrifying.
Yeah, it's real scary in there. Everybody should stay at the circus once. It's good, builds character. They have a great prime rib buffet.
You know in Vegas now you can have a buffet of buffets.
Wait, what?
You can pay $99 and you can go to up to, I believe, 6 buffets in the span of 24 hours.
Oh, that's a terrible idea.
They call it
24 hours. I could do three.
Okay, if you were,
you'd have to. There'd be what some massive dumpers
start?
In there.
What time would you start?
I think that's one. You know, we have some experience with 24 hours.
Okay,
I think that is a pickup first thing in the morning. I think you get up early.
Nope.
A breakfast buffet.
I think you do late dinner.
Do all the buffets have a breakfast and dinner version?
I think they do.
Not all.
I'm sure some of these would. I think you start with a late dinner, late dinner the first night. So you gorge the late dinner.
Are you thinking you stay awake?
No. Then you go to bed and wake up early, and then you do four buffets the next day.
Oh, see, I think you go breakfast. All night. I think you roll hard into this. You go to the all-night buffet
buffets
at like
closed.
3 o'clock
buffets
in the morning.
Close.
There's some all-night buffets if I don't you know where to go. I would argue that the buffet is just generally to be avoided. I think the buffet is always a mistake.
I think Joey might agree with you.
Yeah. Joey's shaking his head, nodding his head over there.
That would be a great buffet experience.
It was a lot of fun.
We, meaning you, great. Norm, me Braga, and everybody but Joey.
Yeah.
Okay.
Custom order mac and cheese.
But you can get custom food at buffets in Vegas now?
There was a guy. I think it was the only custom thing.
Holy crap, so cheesy.
There's just a guy standing there with little pans with pasta in them. And he says,
now.
You want mac and cheese?
It's like the cook-to-order prime rib.
You want some mac and cheese? And I was like, yes, please.
You want the juice?
And then
we
walk over to the
six
other...
six plates of food.
The other little part of the display that has like three or four types of cheeses in it and bacon and some other... There are like three or four other types of meat. And I was like, what's that? And he's like, it's prime rib. And in my head, I was like, do I want prime rib?
Yeah, prime rib was
I did
there?
Not.
Oh,
that
what?
Was that would have been too far.
No,
but I did get all three types of cheese and bacon.
So when I was watching you, Gene and I were sitting at home watching TV or something, watching you guys go to the buffet on Twitter and Instagram. And she said, "Oh God, I think they're at the Wicked Spoon."
We were at the Wicked
Affirmative.
Spoon.
Yeah, and then like pictures of the plates of food came across, and I was like, "Wow, that is ambitious." Mm-hmm. And then about maybe 20 minutes later,
more plates.
It just kept coming.
I made a really bad realization in Vegas.
Yes,
I kind of hate the excess of things like CES and Vegas. But I realized during this buffet that, you know, you pay a fair amount to eat at.
Yeah.
It's an expensive buffet.
Yeah. And I realized that I could get a whole plate full of 10 different things and take like two bites of all of them and just throw the rest of it away.
Yeah. Did you do that?
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, here's the trick to a buffet, especially that type of lavish and extravagant buffet, is you got to go sample everything because you can't gorge on what you see first. If you see a really good little shrimp plate with noodles or something and it looks great,
well, no,
you're going to fill up on that, but then all the great stuff is down the aisle.
See, there are two approaches to the buffet. One is to sample a shitload of different kinds of food.
Sample everything and then double down on things you like.
No, the other way to approach the buffet is to get your value out of it. Like, this is the dangerous... Like, that's an okay way to buffet.
We all got our value.
No, you sample first as the first pass.
No.
And then you get the value
in
the
theory
second, third, fourth, and fifth passes.
The theory is that you go exclusively for high dollar items. So you're going for the shrimp and the lobster and the prime rib and you know, the things that have massive cost or time involvement. Yep. And you exclusively gorge on those until you get your
$75. You can gorge
worth.
On that after you sample everything. And that's the benefit of sampling everything.
I just don't like gorging. I'm not equipped for it anymore.
I think we all sampled and gorged.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah.
Yeah. So, okay. So food questions.
That was the best thing about CES.
What else happened at CES?
Do we want to check in with Arnold?
Yes.
I'd love to see what Arnold's doing.
Someone asked Arnold, is it a tumor? And Arnold says, it's not a tumor.
Exclamation mark.
Good news.
He signs it.
It's not a tumor.
Former governor of California, Arnold. Nice.
Wow, on his iPad.
In pretty good cursive.
That's good. You going to give it a stylus?
For an iPad. Come on.
For an iPad.
Yeah. Okay. So CES. Is there anything? I talked about CES last week on the podcast. I hope people didn't hate that too much.
Talked is a way to describe it.
So everybody asked what was in between the jump cuts, right? Because I cut all the dead space out of a 25-minute video.
It gave it some real energy.
It was real fast. Like I went back and watched it later. I was like, man, I don't think I could actually. Like I seemed really fucking angry here. I wasn't really that angry. I was just a little upset.
Wow, Arnold, original Arnold Schwarzenegger drawing of Reddit, the Reddit alien.
We interrupt this description of last week's podcast to tell you guys that Arnold drew the Reddit alien.
And he said, thanks, Reddit, I had a fabulous time.
Oh, is this the end?
Cursive, and he drew the Reddit alien and cited Arnold Schwarzenegger. That's amazing.
Turn it around, I would see.
Oh, my God. Pay
wow. We did it. That's a pretty good representation.
It's pretty damn good.
Yeah, it's not shabby.
Wow.
I wonder what app he's using to draw on the iPad.
I've got some more saved up, so we can
Okay, we can come back.
Good. Very good. That's the best.
Okay, so best thing you saw at the show, besides the buffet and Lotus of Siam,
Oculus Rift.
And Secret Pizza, which we've talked about
many,
it like
many
before,
times,
and we won't
every,
go back
night.
To again.
Oculus Rift.
Oculus Rift. I saw this at PAX last year. I wasn't... I you can't wear your glasses under the goggles.
Yeah, I can.
Mine are too thick and
both
wide.
Braga and I
maybe they changed the design some.
Yes.
Because it seemed like my eyelashes were hitting the lenses when I was testing it at PAX. We've talked about this at length. I'm not going to get into I don't think we need to get into it anymore. It seems really good, though. Were they showing any actual games, or was it still just Doom 3 BFG?
They were showing the Unreal Citadel demo and Deathmatch in Unreal with bots.
Okay. So and frame rate seemed good.
You have to be locked at 60.
But, I mean, no, like, the motion tracking wasn't laggy. Were they using the new sensor for this?
They were using
this...
the new sensor, but okay. Not the new LCD.
Okay. Anything that you haven't? I mean, there's a 20-minute video on the site that like you literally got into really terrifying level of detail, and everybody should watch if they're interested in this at all.
Oculus Rift, I would say, the second thing that I was most interested in at CES was probably NVIDIA Shield.
That's really,
the thing that I was most interested in.
Do you think that's a real product?
Oh,
I
mean,
I know they're saying
product.
It's coming out.
No, absolutely. Q2.
Are they going to sell them?
Yeah.
Like, are people going to buy them? I guess is the real question.
That is a bigger question.
So, are you?
That is more a function of price.
Okay, so just to explain what the Shield is, in case you don't know, it is a Android kind of clamshelly looking device.
It's Android clamshell handheld.
It has a phone size, slightly bigger than phone size screen, maybe. Gamepad controls on the bottom. And you can play Android games on it, but you can also stream from your PC, your GeForce 600 series or newer equipped PC, PC games. I assume that the games are going to have to support it, maybe, but...
No, just on Steam.
Just Steam games. So are you excited about the streaming portion of this or
I'm
the Android games
the
portion
of this?
Okay, because the only Android portion, who cares?
Yeah, don't really care about the Android portion.
Although I do have to say, a surprising number of Android games support gamepads. Like,
well, no, that's...
Most of the old PC ports...
It's true, but... Yeah. I don't play mobile games all that much.
And you're not going to play old PC
and not
ports.
The ones with... when I do, it's touchscreen-based ones.
Yeah.
Maybe
it's not like you're going to go back to Max Payne.
HDMI to your TV if you buy stuff from Google Play?
I don't think so.
Yeah. But you can HDMI your PC games to your TV.
Okay.
Use that controller.
So did they talk about like specifics? Did they talk about resolution and stuff like that?
720.
Did you get to play this at all?
Yep.
What is it? What's
it's like on live with controller. And it's built into your, you know, to the handheld.
Is it well, so saying it's like on live is kind of a negative because I didn't think on live was very good. Is it like is there compression artifacts and stuff like that?
You see some compression artifacting
in
the racing game.
Like on live tech or on live experience?
I disliked the slight but perceptible lag between your motion and the something happening, and then I also didn't like the fact that you could see compression artifacts.
You could definitely see compression artifacts in some of the dark areas of the screen, and. In terms of lag, I could not tell whether it was because the racing game, the demo was floaty, or because there
was... Was it a tech demo or was it a real game?
It was Need for Speed.
Okay, the most recent one?
Yeah.
What kind of Wi-Fi do you need to do? Will it work over N?
11N through a router.
Really?
Yep.
That's interesting. And will it support AC?
I don't know if it will support AC. I don't think there was an AC chip in
Tegra 4.
Yeah, in Tegra 4. The most interesting thing is that the reason this works is because they say that in GeForce Kepler's cards, 600 series or newer, there is a hardware encoder to encode HD64 while the game is rendering. I don't see why anyone else couldn't just do that. Build a hardware encoder.
I mean,
encoder.
Intel has a hardware MPEG-4 HD64 encoders in... Sandy Bridge and newer, right? That's why AirPlay works
on
Macs.
And why they couldn't just adopt that software and have that stream over client side to any Android device.
Yeah, or any device with the appropriate app. Yeah. I mean, there's no reason Valve couldn't do this with iOS, is what you're saying.
Yep.
except for the control situation. That's it. Kind of interesting, I guess. I mean,
I don't have to pay. I don't want to have to pay $400 to be able to do this.
Yeah, I mean, I could buy a $15 cable from Monoprice and a Xbox controller adapter.
The right way to do it is
get
to,
the same thing.
Is to just output HDMI.
Yeah.
But for people who can't do that, if they need to go over Wi-Fi, it'd be nice for a different solution, cheaper solution.
We should test. Maybe after I'm back from the baby break, I'll get some Wi-Fi. Some wireless HDMI plus USB streamers, and we'll test them out. I've been threatening to for a long time, and I just keep forgetting. Because that would solve the same purpose, and I bet it's going to be cheaper than $400.
Probably cheaper. Yeah.
Anything else on the Shield? Tegra 4 stuff. I mean, one of the things that's interesting about Android to me is that there's a very clear difference in the chipsets. There has to be a difference in the chipsets. But there's absolutely no way for us to test the different chipsets and see which one's better because of the rest of the stuff that goes into an Android phone. So there's no way to get apples to apples comparisons.
More interesting is that out of CES, the big winner in terms of gaming is Valve. And none of these products could exist without big picture mode. And big picture mode taking so long for Valve to actually push out. So you think about three very different categories of products. You have Valve and all of their Steambox.
Yeah.
Affiliates, all the hardware, which is dedicated PC hardware.
So it's not just one Steam Box, just to be clear.
Steam Box, we don't know yet for sure.
It seems like multiple Steam Boxes.
Seems like multiple hardware partners running local hardware, running Steam and Linux-based Steam, piping to your TV.
Oh, it's three levels. Well, from what Gabe said in the Verge interview, it's three levels. The streaming solution that's real lightweight and inexpensive, similar to the Shield thing. A mid-range dedicated GPU, CPU machine that connects directly to the TV and gives a mid-level performance. And then the high-end, I assume, will be things like frag boxes and kind of dedicated high-end gaming machines with real discrete GPUs as opposed to high-end integrated like in the APU.
When we talk about the big three gaming things, you know, XI3/Steambox-style hardware, dedicated PC devices, streaming like Shield, and then also tablets with weird controls like Razer Edge. All of those exist because of Steambox, or because of Big Picture Mode.
Or they can exist.
Can exist because of Big Picture Mode. I mean, Razer Edge and NVIDIA Shield with playing Steam could not work without Big Picture Mode.
Well, it could, but it's much, much worse because the touch interface for Steam was real bad before Big Picture Mode.
No touch.
Do you think Big Picture took so long to come out because they were just getting it right, or if they were they just kind of waiting to put it out until close to having things to actually use with it?
I think waiting because getting it right.
I think, I mean, if you look at the progress of that beta, it launched in beta form. I used it from day one, literally, because I've been playing Steam games in the living room for a long time. It was a really solid product with a few kind of weird places where you hit a wall that you couldn't do something in Big Picture Mode from the launch of the beta. And it has improved to the point that it is literally just another client, another view of the client for Steam at this point. I think every once in a while I'll hit something that I can't do. I usually hit the bug report button at that point. It is increasingly esoteric, weird stuff that you have to drill way down into the app to find problems with at this point. If you compare it to even like OSs and like as a complex product that launched fully baked, it is high on the list of it is on a very short list of things that actually did that in 2012. I can't, like, if you look at Windows 8, it was super jacked at the beginning, and they have driver ecosystem issues, which is what causes that. But like they did a really nice job launching something that was really solid right out of the gate, I thought. Do we want to talk about? I mean, I talked about TV stuff last week. 3D is done. It seems like. Did you see 3D stuff anywhere?
I think some TVs have like no glass 3D.
I think most of the big TVs these days they're still going to be 3D.
Yeah. They're like passive by default, right?
I don't know.
Maybe. Some people are still making plasma TVs, some people are still going to make active 3D glasses.
I think they're just not talking about it that much.
Yeah. Nobody cares.
So amazingly, they think smart TVs are a bigger selling point than 3D.
Yeah. Well, so, you know, we talked to Adam yesterday on a show that'll be up in a few weeks. And I've actually talked to a couple of readers too who actually really like smart TVs, not for the primary TV in the house, But for the kids' room and the secondary TVs, the ones in the kitchen.
Because you don't want to have to pay another $100 for another Roku box.
Well, yeah, and it's one less remote for a room that you don't necessarily want a remote. So, I mean, we're hard on smart TVs. I don't think that they're good. I really don't think that they're good as they are right now. But as I can see the usability for like you said, kids' rooms and kitchens and stuff like that. Anything interesting? Samsung showed their modular thing again. I know, the upgradable smart TV. Any value, anything out of that at all?
It seems more to think about it, less likely it's something that people will actually buy, understand, and use.
It seems like those MHL HDMI sticks are probably more realistic, like the thing that Roku showed last year.
But Samsung is going for a complete architecture change, like all the thinking guts in that.
Oh, for the TV entirely. Oh, wow, yeah. That's interesting. Okay. Do we want to talk about streaming, about 4K stuff at all?
In that it looks wonderful, but we all know about the problems of 4K.
And probably late 2014 at the earliest, maybe 2015. Well, there's no realistic prices.
The way TVs work is that, you know, products are launched January, come out in July, and kind of go on sale in
at
so
right. I think the first time we'll see a TV that a normal person would consider buying that's a 4K set is Black Friday 2014 or 2015. Maybe
I'm gonna say I'm even go 2015.
I think even then, if they're priced okay, there's still not going to be like anything to do with them.
2015 is a year for 4K.
Yeah,
I guess if the scalers are as great as they like to say, then maybe it's.
Or if fine. You're running something like a Hopper and you have four tuners, then with a 4K TV, you could have four 1080p streams
on the same set.
On the same set, and really have your crazy situation run.
The dream of the future. I don't watch that much TV.
And touchscreen.
Anything else? Did you guys go to the Qualcomm press conference?
No, but we talked about it extensively.
On the night with Robbie, right? Robbie and Christina?
No, that was with the Pepcom night event, and we went straight from Sony to Pepcom.
Okay.
Skipping out on Qualcomm.
Okay. Oh, no, but when did you talk about Qualcomm?
Well, that was every single night.
Okay.
of the week. Everyone had something to say. It's online, I think, if you want to watch it.
It was real weird. The Verge did a mashup, like a supercut of the Qualcomm press conference, and it is real weird.
Capturing the weirdness.
It's real weird. It's worth watching. Anything else for CES? That's all that we have on the list. I feel like we
can. CES 2013.
Right, Fitbit? Any personal health monitor things that were worth, that were interesting?
They have a new wristband called the Flex, but it doesn't work as a watch. So I'm just going to wait for Gen 2 for Nike Fuel Band.
Nike Fuel Band Gen 1 wasn't Bluetooth 4, right?
No. None of them are Bluetooth 4, only Fitbit Flexes.
So the Bluetooth 4 thing is a huge, huge game changer in terms of battery life on these. Because I've been using this Fitbit Zip thing for like 2-3 months now. It runs off of a single watch battery, like a CR1023. And it's still at like 2/3 charge. So like I really can't overemphasize how important Bluetooth 4 is to making that kind of stuff usable.
Yours has Bluetooth 4?
Yeah, so it's like a little – it fits in your watch pocket. I think it's specifically designed to fit in the watch pocket of your jeans.
Isn't that the coin pocket?
It's a watch pocket. We've talked about this before.
Will's watch pocket. Watch.
You used to put your pocket watch there. So, yeah, it has a little screen, and it's one watch battery that's lasted for ages.
We'll be doing
we'll do a quick look at that.
In-depth review of that later on. Yeah.
Before the battery. I was trying to get an idea of what battery life was going to be like, but it's not cooperating, and I use it every day.
Can you imagine hipsters in skinny jeans trying to get their pocket watches out of their pockets?
Real problem. I watched The Simpsons. I've been watching old Simpsons. New Simpsons. I watched The Simpsons with the Portland people the other day. I don't know. It's worth seeking out. It was really, really, like, really funny. I had forgotten how much I liked The Simpsons. Homer... the Voodoo Donuts guy moved in next door to Homer, basically, on the other side from Flanders.
Voodoo Donuts was on The Simpsons?
It wasn't. They were called Satan Donuts, but it was very clearly Voodoo
Donuts.
Wow. Yeah.
Topical.
Yeah, they were dialed into the hipster revolution in Portland. The dream of the 90s is alive. That'll do it for CES, I guess, then, unless you guys have it. This is the last call. We're never going to talk about CES again.
No. Go to the site.
Done.
Okay. Should we take some questions and then take outtakes and lunch?
The show.
Here we go. I'm not used to the new mixer yet. I apologize.
Emails?
Well, but we do the other one.
Emails.
We don't do emails. We do
emails.
No.
Questions.
If you have a question for This Is Only Test, the email address is podcast@tested.com. Or if you want to send in questions to Still Untitled, send them to that same address, podcast@tested.com, and make the subject line questions for Adam. Here is our first question.
Hey guys, this is Austin from New York with a would you rather question for you. But first, a bit of trivia about New York City is that Norman Chan once ate his way through the city using Yelp. So the question is, let's say that you're in a world where somehow you're only allowed to play games from one of the following two groups. A, all platform holder exclusives, or B, all multi-platform releases. You can't play God of War if you choose Group B, for example, and vice versa. You could never play Darksiders 2 if you choose Group A because that's a multi-platform release. And some rules to clarify here, I'm talking about Sony, Nintendo, and Microsoft, and then all computing platforms as kind of platform holder. And you don't have to worry about buying hardware because you have a magical box that plays everything. And this is for all of your life, past, present, and future. So if you've got a game that started out as an exclusive but then eventually goes multi-platform, that shifts groups. Thanks, and always be testing.
Platform exclusives only. Done.
So nothing but Mario for you?
I would.
No, nothing but Mario, Halo, StarCraft, Diablo.
What if StarCraft comes
StarCraft
out on
was
3DS?
On the N64.
Yeah.
Not the same StarCraft. StarCraft 3 or StarCraft 2 wasn't.
What if StarCraft comes out for...
Then it'll no longer be fun.
What if it's Mac and PC?
No, he said all computing.
Oh. Yeah, I think I'd go for platform
exclusives. Yeah, platform exclusives.
Mainly
because
I like playing PC
what
games.
Let's talk about what are the games you won't be able to play.
Won't play Call of Duty.
No Assassin's Creed.
No Grand Theft Auto.
No Grand Theft
GTA,
Auto. That's the
Madden.
Prime. Okay. No Dance Central.
No Dance Central.
Oh, wait, no, that's exclusive.
Although he was talking all time. Like, if you think about not being able to play GTA 3, that would be a bummer.
I have no desire to play GTA 3 right now.
I'm talking
He's saying back in time,
8 years ago.
Huh. I wouldn't be able to play Bastion. Love Bastion. Wouldn't be able to play Portal 2.
It's true.
Wouldn't be able to play Left 4 Dead.
Or Portal 1.
Or Team Fortress.
This is very true. That's okay. I live with that.
What's the multiplayer stuff? So your multiplayer game would be Halo.
Or StarCraft.
I guess. Mine would be Halo for sure.
Wow. City. Ooh, SimCity. Platform exclusives seem to be the clear winners here.
Clear
Especially
winner.
Coming into a new console generation. New console generation is golden time for platform exclusives.
Yeah. No Batman.
Although oddly for Sony, it's usually backloaded for their exclusives. Like a lot of their awesome stuff usually comes out
late.
Because they have those first party studios that spend 7 years making a freaking game.
Well, you'd be able to play Arkham City because it was a Xbox 360 exclusive at the beginning. No. Same thing for Mass Effect.
Was it?
Mass Effect was an Xbox
Mass
exclusive.
Effect,
Mass
yes.
Effect
was.
I don't think Arkham was.
No,
Arkham Asylum, not Arkham City.
I'm pretty sure that was simultaneous PS3 360.
It was at least simultaneous PC and Xbox.
I would call that firmly multi-platform.
That's a real good game. And then you'd also lose all the indie stuff, though, too. So you know Meat Boy... No Fez.
Meat Boy you'd be able to play on Xbox
for 6 months.
Yeah,
I guess.
Yeah, exactly. That's good enough.
Yeah. Okay. I'm with you on this one. You've convinced me. I was going to say nothing but third part, nothing but
I think the system, the time-based exclusives works in our advantage in this situation.
It gives you a window. Dark Souls, Demon Souls. No Dark Souls though. It's dark times. Dark. Yeah. No XCOM. No Walking Dead. I would have missed all of my favorite games of the last year if I didn't play multi-platform games.
I could have lived without Walking Dead.
Fuck you, Wes. I'm going to play another question. Get this horrible taste of Fenland out of my mouth.
Hey there, Norman Will. It's Marcus from Tucson, Arizona. Bit of hometown trivia is that you would call someone from Arizona an Arizonan, not an Arizonian. So be sure to remember that. Now, I'm curious as to what your ideal smartphone would contain. It could be any mashup of any smartphones and their features that exist today, or features that you would like to see included in smartphones that have not yet been integrated. This could have anything to do with its operating system or its hardware, but be sure to keep it a little realistic. Thanks, guys. Just me being curious about what two masters of technology could come up with. Y'all do a fantastic show, and always be testing. Bye.
Sorry, Wes.
That's the second time I've heard that question, and I realized that I didn't listen to it either time, because as soon as he says the Arizonan thing, I just think bullshit in my head, and then I forget.
What do you think the proper collective noun is for Arizona residents?
I mean, until today, I thought it was Arizonian, but apparently there is a USS Arizonan, so that's pretty strong.
I always thought it was Zonies, like Arizonies.
That's real close to bronies.
Yeah. Do you know that Gabe Newell's a brony?
Not surprised. Did not know.
Yeah.
Wow.
I've thought about this.
Okay.
I would take the keyboard from Windows Phone, the software keyboard. I would take the mail client, the Gmail client from Android, Chrome from Android. I would just take all the Google apps from Android. Let's be real. Google Now, I would take. And then I would take the app ecosystem from iOS and the OS from iOS, and I would jam them into an iPhone 5 with NFC.
I want the hardware keyboard from my old Samsung BlackDeck.
Oh, fuck.
I want...
I'm turning you down.
I want a device that on the back is probably half as thin as the iPhone 5, and on the back it's titanium. So it's light and sturdy and real firm. So
not scratchy.
And not scratchy. And because it's made of titanium, it's not easy to bend that much. So it can be thinner and still fit in my pocket. I like this form factor. I think I would chop off the top part of the phone. Mm-hmm. So I don't even think it needs to be that tall. But I do like a 16:9 screen.
I wish I had a translucent screen that I could pull out from the side and use for augmented reality stuff. Because I would never do that. It would be really cool if you could.
All right.
Wishes were horses.
I've got a would you rather from a Reddit user.
Okay.
To Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Ooh, topical.
Reddit user Synanon says, would you rather fight 100 duck-sized predators or one predator-sized duck? And Arnold says, I would choose the one predator-sized duck instead of dealing with 100 duck-sized predators. I've already fought a predator-sized predator, so I'm confident I could handle the duck.
That's, and you know what? I believe
that
him.
Is absolutely the right answer.
And I believe him.
I am going to... I didn't drag in...
I'm sure he took it seriously, too.
That is a 100% serious answer to a serious question. I'm looking for the outro song file, but I guess that'll do it for us today. If you have a question, again, the podcast answer address is... question address is podcast@tested.com. Keep your questions short, under 45 seconds. And make sure you don't sound like you're you know... fighting a predator while you record this question. Today's outro is brought to you by, I think, KJN, but I'm not entirely certain. I'm looking right now. I'm going to the bottom of the page. It's going so slowly.
Keep on filling time.
Let's just say KJN is today's outro viewer. Why is our website so damn slow? KJN, I was right. Wesley Fenlon, Norman Chan, thank you as always for coming by the show. Wes, do you have anything to plug? Have you written anything for Wirecutter or anything lately?
Nope.
Anything for us you want to plug?
Talk about cheap monoprice monitors.
We have a short post up about monoprice doing a basically their version of one of those Korean 27-inch 1440p. Yes.
And are they guaranteeing pixels and stuff like that?
Five or fewer dead pixels.
That's not bad on a 2560 by 1440 monitor, whatever the resolution is.
Yep.
So $350 for the monoprice one?
$390.
That's not a bad deal.
Which is basically what you pay on eBay.
So you're basically just paying a little bit, a tiny bit more and getting a guarantee and a place to return
it. For a warranty, yeah.
That's awesome. Norm, anything for you?
No, it's good.
The Harrison post started today, or Tuesday. So you should definitely check that out. Harrison Crick's Bullpen Props is doing twice monthly posts as he builds us something awesome. And I'm not going to tell you what. You have to go read it to see what he's building us. And today's outro is brought to you by KJ. And thank you, as always, for listening to This Is Only Test. Stay tuned for Fake Outtakes. We'll be right back.
Hi there. I didn't see you.
Tested.
Cargo pants, sure, this will fit cargo pants. You should not be wearing cargo pants.
Stand by, don't wear cargo pants.
What do you hate about The Watchmen, Wes Fenlon?
Everything but the opening credits.
Wow, the opening credits are really good.
The opening credits are phenomenal. I think he did...
Is it the pirate comic being removed that you object to?
No.
Why not?
I would see it too much.
You would what?
I would see too much.
See too much.
Well,
see.
Then can we talk about Al Roker pooping his pants instead?
Let's talk about Al Roker pooping his pants.
So, wait, so Norm hates Watchmen more than me.
I don't hate Watchmen. At all. I cannot be part of this conversation.
No, okay. Why? Hold on. You have to. You can't just cop out and then not explain why you're not being part of the conversation.
I can't be part of this conversation because
your opinion is so much better than either Wes's or mine.
Yes, we'll go with that one.
We're both assholes.
So you think it's a masterpiece?
I don't think it's a masterpiece.
He thinks it's Zack Snyder's finest work.
Don't think it's his finest work either.
I think he totally fucked up the villain. Just in terms of casting and presentation, like he was so, Ozymandias was so clearly evil, like from the beginning, that he looked, everything about him looked evil. It totally fucked his character
arc. He looks like evil Braga.
Yeah. He looks like a really nice little dude wearing super evil clothing and acting suspiciously the whole movie.
See, in the but when I read the book, I thought he was super evil too. I totally got that Ozymandias was evil.
I thought they messed up his character arc, and I thought the slow-mo like glorifying violence also was very like tonally incorrect compared to the comic.
But I think the slow-mo, I can see that, but I took the slow-mo as, hey, here are my favorite here are the things I think represent the Watchmen comic, and I'm going to present them in a way that is going to hit you over the fucking head with, oh my god, this came from the comic book.
It was very much a extremely accurate surface level representation of the comic that I think didn't get to.
Oh, Joey's doing more push-ups.
What was actually good about Watchmen? So okay. It looked like Watchmen. But.
So let's talk about Al Roker. No, Norm's going to do some push-ups. We'll talk about Watchmen for 10 or 12 push-ups worth. I liked that they took out the dumb space squid.
Yeah, I was fine with that change.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I thought the end was pretty good. That was okay. I thought it was a nice fight, the end.
The Malin Ackerman was not great.
Malin Ackerman is never great. That is a fair point. I would agree with that. What's her name? The woman who played Malin Ackerman's mom was Carly. Awesome.
Carly also not great.
You didn't think so?
I thought terrible.
I thought she captured the terrible aspect of the original Silk Spectre. Anyway, hey guys, did you know that Al Roker pooped his pants?
I've heard this.
Was it on camera?
No. he said that he was at the White House. It was right after he had gastric bypass surgery.
Oh, this is what I assume. I didn't hear that part, but right. I assume that it was right after he had the surgery where he did not have as
you
much
don't have full control over your GI
of your
tract.
Entire tract, seeing as much of the tract is removed,
right,
the digestive part.
So
he just goes straight through.
He was having
this Bush White House.
I would assume Obama. So. Probably no.
Because
gastric bypass was a long time ago.
Okay, all right.
He said that he was in the White House walking down the hall and thought, oh, I'll just crop dust the shit out of someone. And then, something it was more than he expected came out. What's the reaction?
What was the scenario?
What do you do when you shit yourself in the White House?
Contingency plan. Yeah.
He went to the bathroom, took off his underpants, wadded them up, threw them in the trash at the White House, and went commando for the rest of the day.
Wow.
Well, what else are you going
to
do?
The entire range of visual images that we did not need. You know, what he really needed was he needed the new Dean Kamen invention that plugs straight into your stomach and pulls food out.
Is this a CS thing?
No, Dean Kamen has an invention.
Inventor of the Segway.
Inventor of the Segway.
Ginger.
I heard also, about this. And also devices to purify water, turn pee into drinkable water.
Okay.
Has now a piece of dieting technology that plugs into your stomach and then extracts food from your stomach.
Where does it go?
And puts back in the fluids that you need.
Okay. I don't understand. Explain again.
Okay. You take off an operation.
Okay.
Where you basically punch a hole in your stomach.
That seems like a bad
idea. With a fist. and then you attach a tube to it when you need to. Or I guess there's some type of valve and port. And you can press a button and it will extract food from your stomach that you've consumed.
Yeah.
Before it is completely digested and is absorbed.
Okay. Well, because food doesn't get absorbed in your stomach. That happens in the lower intestine
for the
most part. Well, the
digestive process happens the moment it touches your tongue all the way down to the lower small intestines. But most of it, yes, is in the stomach and the large intestines. And then it puts back in the things that you need for your stomach to continue working.
The shit that plants crave?
I hope it's not Rondo, but yeah. Yep. Real invention.
This is I feel like pictures. I'm missing some important details here, but just on the surface,
what more
this
do you
sounds
need?
Like a terrible, terrible
what more
idea.
Do you need?
Is it usable on a Segway?
I do not believe so. I also do not believe gyros are involved.
Do you think if you had this pump and you went to the sure, definitely euros. If you had this pump and you went to a buffet in Vegas, do you think they'd make you leave if you were like pumping, if you were gorging yourself and then pumping it out into buckets? I'm like, hey, can you dispose of this bucket, please?
I think anything involving buckets in a Vegas buffet is an automatic
frowned
out the
upon.
Door.
Yeah. Mm.
Yeah, would you like to see a diagram of how this device works?
Yeah. Yes, I would.
It does look like a machine with a tube pumping in your stomach.
It looks like a colostomy bag for your stomach.
I think that it is similar to that.
This is a terrible idea. Why not just eat less? Isn't that easier, ultimately speaking? I mean, I guess there are people with medical conditions that require, maybe this is better than a gastric bypass or a lap band or any of that kind of stuff, but this sounds like a terrible idea.
Recently ran into patent.
Did they have a time limit on the Wicked Spoon buffet?
No time limit.
You could stay in there as long as you wanted?
We stayed there until we could not move, and then once we could move, we decided to get out. We also had a conversation of what's worse, because someone's got to have eaten so much. And, you know, when you go to the buffet, not all the food's going to be fresh. Some of those crab legs, king crab legs, have been sitting
there for
hours.
The ones at the bottom of the pile.
Yeah, so someone's going to have a bad reaction. What do you do if you have a bad reaction and you have to upchuck? And you do it at the buffet table.
It's not, that's frowned
upon. Are you then excused out? Like, can you go back? It's all gone now, but I've paid for the buffet. I need to get more.
I bet that we have a listener who has been exposed to this situation.
So what happens? I'm sure they cover it up, and you get to move tables.
Do you think the janitor comes with the sawdust, like in elementary school?
I have to.
Like the smell, that super cedar smell?
What's worse, though, is it worse being the guy who upchucked and then goes back to the line?
Yeah, is this an opportunity?
Wipes off and then goes back to the line to get more?
Oh.
Or is it worse the guy sitting at the table next to him who continues eating?
I think we have to clarify, is this worse like for your soul or just like for your day? Because it's definitely worse for your day if you're the dude next to the puke table.
Right.
I asked for a refund.
You did nothing wrong.
I asked for a refund.
You did nothing wrong. You were just enjoying your buffet. And you're in a very vulnerable position in that you just stuff yourself also with a lot of food.
Right. You're a ticking time bomb.
That's going to totally fuck up your day. But it's not going to stick with you forever.
Well, what if it sets off a puke chain? Like, remember you were in elementary school and some kid would puke in the back of the bus
and then,
like, it would go up the fucking bus and like, seven other kids would throw up?
Right.
Pretty soon it's The Exorcist in there. I mean, if that happened in a Vegas buffet, it could, like, they might have to close the place for a few days to clean it out.
Last thing you want is eating some bone marrow.
Yeah.
Mixed with some calbee and some delicious roast duck.
Yeah.
And I think
it depends on if it's projectile vomit or if it's kind of like guilty puke on your plate and like immediately try to wipe it up with napkins.
Oh, you mean
vomit.
The almost comes out of your mouth, I think, and you swallow it back in?
I've done that before.
Oh my gosh.
Not at a buffet, but just like was sick and had to give a talk. And I was like, oh God, I'm going to throw up. You know, and then you make the horrible noises.
It's not fun.
No, it was bad. I did some really, really sick. Aggressive vomiting over the holiday break. I got the norovirus. And I'm going to go ahead and tell you, like that is the kind of throwing up that you usually don't do until you're in a position to not remember how bad you threw up. Like the day that we did the Jedi mind trick testing thing, that was the last. Do you remember that? Probably
I remember
not.
It. I didn't throw up that much. Or I didn't throw up at all. Actually,
I didn't throw up that much. He says, yeah, yeah. It's not good throwing up aggressively, and if you think you have the stomach flu, you should go to the bathroom, is my advice to you.
You really start to hate the world when your throat is just raw, but you can't stop throwing up.
This wasn't that kind of thing. It wasn't like prolonged. It was like two good rounds of just thinking I was going to blow up a kidney or something. You know, like the dog was coming into the bathroom. She's like, are you okay? I'm going to lick your feet. I think you might be dying.
All right, let's get lunch.
Yeah, lunch sounds great. See you guys next week.